Good morning.
Good morning.
As a part of this morning's Mass, as we've done for the last two Sundays, we'll be having another scrutiny, and that is for those who will be baptized. Wagner is with us this morning. Those who will be baptized at the Easter Vigil receive special blessings, which basically are protection and inspiration for them as they get ready to receive the sacrament of baptism and other sacraments at the Easter Vigil. So that'll take place right after this homily. And then after we do that that special blessing, we'll go on with the creed. Your part, when I do this special blessing, this scrutiny, is I'll be giving a blessing, but there's also times when you'll be praying in silence. And as you're praying in silence, what the church asks of you is just pray for Wagner, that he have a spirit of repentance, an awareness of what sin is, and the freedom that is offered to him in Jesus Christ in baptism, in having all of his sins taken away, and then to live in the freedom of the children of God. The beautiful things that we possess as baptized people are promised to Wagner. We'll be praying that he's aware of these things as he receives this blessing, this protection, in preparation for his baptism in just two weeks from now. Today's readings are about the resurrection. And so we have the wonderful miracle of Jesus raising Lazarus from the dead. We can imagine how very happy his sisters were. They were so heartbroken at his death. Clearly, they all had a close relationship with each other. And so in this passage, Jesus raises him from the dead. As he is restored to life, we want to keep in mind that this was human life that he received back from Jesus. And so that down the line, whether 10, 20, 30, 40, whatever years later, Lazarus would die again. Today's readings, not only the gospel, but all the readings, actually are a foreshadowing and a teaching to us of the promised resurrection of Jesus, which we'll be celebrating in just 2 weeks when we celebrate Easter. And the wonder of this event, while Lazarus' raising is great, Jesus is even better, because Jesus also succumbs to death. Jesus rises again. He conquers death. But in his resurrection, Jesus never dies again. He never dies again. So Lazarus did die again. Jesus would never die again. And when his body comes back, his body was glorified. So we see the five wounds from his passion, but all the other wounds, the disfigurement, the sufferings he underwent, all taken away as a prefigurement of what is in mind for us. And that brings us to perhaps the greatest consolation for us in this passage, and that is in the gospel, Jesus promises resurrection to those who believe in him. If we believe in him, that when we die, we will rise again as well. What a consolation this is for us, because that means our loved ones, people close to us who believed in the Lord, they've died, but we won't remain eternally separated from them. We'll be restored to each other. Again, our Lord's bodily resurrection is a reminder of the glory of his body. He promises the same glorious body to us, a glorified body. And so as we go through life, we get older, our bodies get weaker, we get injured, we have diseases, we have problems. All these problems will be taken away. All these things will be removed, and we'll have glorified bodies. What a great hope that is. So this passage today is of great importance in revealing to us the resurrection, what Jesus has in mind for us. This passage, this gospel passage, is also very helpful because we can glean from it, we can learn from it, what is Jesus' attitude towards death. And this is very important because as we look carefully in this gospel, we'll see that his attitude about death is an attitude that we often have as well. And I want to highlight a word, perturbed, that occurs twice in this passage, and occurs about 3/4 of the way through the passage. It's after Jesus and Martha have spoken. When they finish speaking, Martha goes to Mary and lets Mary know that Jesus is asking for her. So Mary then goes to Jesus. When Mary first speaks to Jesus, right after that, we see this word perturbed for the first time. I just want to read that to you. When Jesus saw her weeping, this is Mary, when Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come with her weeping, he became perturbed and deeply troubled, and said, "Where have they laid him?" A few moments later, as Jesus is going to the tomb, it says, "So Jesus, perturbed again, came to the tomb." These are the two instances where the word perturbed is used to describe Jesus. Now, I came across a commentator who emphasized this word, and as I was reading what he had to say about this word, I was thinking to myself, I generally think of the word perturbed as being kind of mildly upset. Mildly upset. But his point in his commentary was that in the Greek, the word actually is much stronger than in English, almost like disturbed, or within himself, he was angry. He was deeply angry. And as we think about what Jesus is beholding, we can see why Jesus would be angry, why there would be this strong sense of the word perturbed, disturbed, deeply angry within himself. When he's seeing the mourners, he's seeing Mary weeping. He's seeing the Jews weeping. The friends of Lazarus are all weeping. Jesus is beholding profound sadness. Human beings deeply sad. And while Martha earlier had professed faith in the resurrection, she said the resurrection at the last day was going to happen for her brother. For the Jewish people at this time, what the resurrection was actually very sketchy. And so it was seen as a good thing, but they didn't know when, they didn't know how it was going to come about. And so then they felt like they'd lost their brother for a long time to come. It was not going to be the same, the loving relationship they had in their house together, the two sisters and the brother. And so they were mourning. That's one reason why Jesus was perturbed. Perturbed at the sadness caused by the loss of their brother. But then even more, when Jesus gets to the tomb, it says he's perturbed again. We can imagine why Jesus would be perturbed. Human beings, we are the highest of God's visible creation. Of all the things that we can see, we are the highest. We are a marvel. We are magnificent. We're a masterpiece. But in this masterpiece, we're meant to be this integrity of our bodies and souls together. To have our souls leave our bodies means our bodies are just like another thing, susceptible to corruption, to bacteria. So imagine if we made some, let's say, great, great meal, and the meal gets infested by bacteria and worms and starts to rot and stink and fall apart. That's how we would feel if it was our meal. Jesus is now beholding a man in a tomb. This was not a part of God's plan. And this is why Jesus would be perturbed within. But there's even more, not just to realize what he was looking like, 4 days dead, but also realizing this came about not because his father's plan, this was not part of the father's plan, this was a consequence of original sin. This was caused by Adam and Eve departing from what God told them to do. They succumbed to a lie. They believed a lie of Satan, and as a result, were cheated out of their inheritance, their well-being, their lives. Imagine if a friend of ours got cheated out of all of his wealth. How sad we'd be for him. Or let's think of a friend or family member who loses his life. He's drawn into some kind of a trap, and in that trap, gets killed, loses his life. That's what Jesus was beholding, Satan. And to show the connection with Satan, although Lazarus was bound with these burial cloths, Jesus says, "Untie him and let him go." It's almost like he's realizing this man is in the bondage of Satan, so let him free from that bondage. In the face of this man's death, and these people crying. This Jesus is perturbed within. He's angry. He's upset. We also hear that Jesus wept. It says, and Jesus wept. That occurs only two times in the scriptures. Perhaps he wept more, but we only hear about it twice. One was when he was looking at Jerusalem and realizing these people had not listened to him. These people had rejected him. And in this rejection, their salvation was in peril. And so he wept. Now in the face of the destruction of the human being in a tomb, the heartbreak of other human beings beholding this man's death, Jesus joined with them and wept. I'm highlighting this because what we see in Jesus is being perturbed, his tears, his heartbreak, distress, anger, all these emotions. These are emotions that all of us experience when we experience the death of a loved one, or perhaps we're aware of our own imminent death. It's heartbreaking, but we're not alone. Jesus is with us. Jesus shares all these emotions. But Jesus also died. He went through this, and he rose again. And in his resurrection, the resurrection now is no longer this sketchy something that people believed in but really didn't know about. Jesus made it very concrete, very physical, very bodily to let people know, what is the resurrection? Jesus says, I am the resurrection, and he rises. And so in time, when he rose, people like Martha and Mary, Lazarus, would be able to see exactly what is the resurrection. It is something glorious. It is something wonderful. This teaching today about the resurrection is so important, so practical, because death is our enemy. Death is looming over us. As we get older and older, it becomes more of a reality, something we need to deal with. But it's also a paradox, because Jesus has overcome it. And so we have the challenge, how do we live with this terrible reality that afflicts our loved ones, is going to afflict us? And how do we accept it as Jesus did? How do we live with it, pass through it, and eventually participate in his resurrection? An idea came to me, and it has to do with this year of St. Francis of Assisi. During this year of St. Francis of Assisi, it'd be good for all of us, as often as we can, to turn to him, this great saint, great wisdom, great simplicity, great poverty. Turn to St. Francis of Assisi and see if he can help us. As I was thinking about him, he can help us because he wrote a poem about creation. And in there, in that poem, he mentions death. And he calls her Sister Death, or better still, Sister Bodily Death, referring to the death of our bodies. So I want to read a part of this poem to you. I can't read the whole thing. It's too bad because it is so beautiful. But I want to read a little part of it in the beginning, just to give you an idea, sort of the rhythm of the poem, what he's doing in praising creation. But how it also comes to other things not part of creation, not part of God's plan, nonetheless part of our human condition, that can be used for us to come to God, to meet God. Basically, he's telling us is death will have no power over us if we're in God's grace, if we have God's protection. So let me read this poem. It's called The Canticle of the Creatures. I'll read a part of it, the first part, and then I'll go jump down to the part about Sister Bodily Death. Most High, all-powerful, good Lord, yours are the praises, the glory, and the honor, and all blessing. To you alone, Most High, do they belong, and no human is worthy to mention your name. Praise be you, my Lord, with all your creatures, especially Sir Brother Sun, who is the day and through whom you give us light. And he is beautiful and radiant with great splendor, and bears a likeness of you, Most High One. Praise be you, my Lord, through Sister Moon and the stars. In heaven you form them clear and precious and beautiful. That is to get an idea of what St. Francis is all about in this poem. And now I want to jump down. He speaks about sister bodily death, death of the body, sister bodily death. Praise be you, my Lord, through our sister bodily death, from whom no one living can escape. Woe to those who die in mortal sin. Blessed are those whom death will find in your most holy will, for the second death shall do them no harm. Here, St. Francis of Assisi, who had an especial appreciation for creation and teaches us that appreciation, also has an appreciation for something not a part of God's creation, namely death. He shows us how we can accept this, not because it's good, but because Jesus has used it for something good. And that is death for us is the doorway to the resurrection.